Welcome to the fifth episode of All Things Crypto, an Elk Finance podcast.
I am Fareed.
And I'm Shiloh, also known as LT Snake Plissken. So today, we're talking all about stablecoins.
Please keep in mind, we are not financial advisors, and this is not a financial advice. If you're looking for financial advice, please find a licensed advisor in your area.
So our mission in the podcast is to provide resources to people who are interested in crypto.
Today we are talking about stablecoins, what they are, and most importantly, how they work. They are an important part of the crypto market.
Yeah, so, and as always, if we get something wrong, let us know. We welcome your feedback. We're here to learn and share some ideas. So share that feedback on our Telegram and tell us directly at t.me/elk_financing. And you can find me under the name LT Snake Plissken.
Perfect. Let's get into it.
All right. So I want to credit Roland Rude again for a wonderful article about stablecoins. You can head on over to the Elk Academy on our Medium in the link in the description here. And check out this article for more details or even follow along as we're talking. So, yeah, let's get into that.
Perfect. You know what? I think we should have done this episode a little bit earlier, but I don't know. Maybe this is a kind of a good introduction and a good start.
Yeah.
What are stable coins?
So a stable coin is generally a token on the crypto market that is equal in value to any value. It's pegged to a certain value. And most often, the most common stable coins are the same value as a US dollar.
Okay.
Yeah, so they keep their value pegged to that value no matter basically what happens.
So you're telling me it's something like when you're going to a casino, you're just basically exchanging your dollars with something which the casino accepts, and you can now go and bet in different casinos.
Basically, yeah. So they're basically chips that represent, the U.S. dollar, but they're not U.S. dollars. Most of the time, U.S. dollars. There's definitely some other stable coins linked to other prices.
So when you're saying that they are pegged, where do they get their values from?
So, well, there's a few different ways they get their value. So the first most common way is they're backed by real fiat money, as in real world cash.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think about like Fort Knox, which is, in case you don't know, the place where they, you know, keep all the gold in the U.S., ideally that's supposed to be backing their currency and everything like that. And
that's a lie. That's not the truth anymore.
It's not the truth. In the 70s, they diverged from that.
Richard Nixon.
If you want a great explanation of kind of this piece, you should watch the third Die Hard movie.
It's a very good documentary.
It's excellent. The villain in the movie ends up, you know, doing something with the Fort Knox, with all the gold in Fort Knox to do something to the economy. Won't spoil it in case you haven't seen it, but it's from 1995. So anyway, so that's one way. They're backed by real fiat, real world cash. So
back means that for every stable coin,
right,
they are guaranteeing that you're going to have, let's say, one US dollar.
Right. So that if, you know, for example, everybody sold all the stable coins that everyone had, there would be enough to pay everyone out. Mm-hmm. So something like Tether, they aim to do this. And we'll get into this a little bit later. They don't actually have all of the money available to cover if everyone sold.
Yeah, they are so far saying that they have $69 billion to back up every single Tether they have out there. But
did they say it?
They didn't say it, but implied.
Right, so I hope they do. But I know there was some controversy around them not necessarily having that, but aims to be seen. So that's one of the ways where they're backed by real money. The second type of stablecoin that they get their value by being collateralized by a cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that if everyone, the value is backed by another token or another project's liquidity. So if people start selling this token, it would then be covered by, let's say we've got a token called I don't know, gecko coin, because coin gecko, I don't know. And they came out with a gecko US stable coin. So they would then link that their all their like value in their stable coin, they would link that to this whatever that people have invested in their gecko coin for their stable coin, for mm-hmm. example. And I don't know why I didn't just use a real world example. DAI.
Yeah.
Right? DAI. So basically they have tokens locked into a smart contract, which then issues a stablecoin based on the deposited collateral. So for DAI, they have just as much, there's just as much liquidity locked into a smart contract that backs it, that is then emptied if people, you know, start to sell off DAI to cover everyone and what they've got.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense?
It kind of makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. So this one's it's a little bit more complicated, because I know if they're collateralized by crypto, the prices of that cryptocurrency can vary.
That's right.
So they've got to make sure that whatever is collateralizing it, backing it up, is going to be equal in value to what's out there.
And that would be a tough challenge.
Yes.
Know, because you have to make sure that at any time,
mm-hmm.
you have enough to back it up.
Yes.
So disregarding if your price of your token goes up or down.
Right. And like, I mean, sure, they're betting on the fact in both of these cases that not everyone's going to sell off their stable coin, because, you know, why would you? It's a stable coin. It's not going to crash, or, you know, so it's unlikely that people sell it all at the same time. That is the
hope. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the hope, but you never know, right?
That's right.
And then the third kind is the algorithmic or non-collateralized stable coins. So this is a little bit more complicated and kind of interesting. So a good example of this would be Terra USD. So UST. So basically what happens is they have some liquidity behind the token.
Okay. Right?
And they basically, if they have more liquidity at that time, they mint more tokens. They mint more, in this case, US dollar value tokens. But if people start to sell off, they have a repository where like a pocket of them that they then burn some. Right. So they increase how much is on the market at any given time. So when they mint them, as in create tokens, that they would do that when they have more liquidity than there are tokens. They would keep it even, right? They don't do it like somebody's not sitting at a switchboard and doing this, right? Mm-hmm. It's a smart contract that would mint if there's more liquidity and burn these tokens, decreasing the supply when there is less liquidity.
So they're playing with inflation and deflation exactly. to make sure that the value stays the same.
Right. So when the supply is high, yeah. And the demand is high, then, you know, they'll mint more to make sure the supply and demand match. But the demand goes down, then chances are, you know, people are selling off, then they'll burn to keep up with the lower demand, so that they can all keep the you know, the value of the US dollar.
So the question is, USD, DAI, or USDT?
Yeah.
Do they make a huge difference in a sense of if you're in a crypto world and you're trying to exchange your stable coin with any other token? Do you have any preference and why?
For me personally, I really like, I'm a big fan of USDC.
Okay.
Because they have fully backed their token. So if everyone were to cash out, they do have enough to cover it. For sure. As far as I know, I like DAI. It's an innovative model. I noticed with something like DAI, there's a little bit more price fluctuation,
mm-hmm.
as in a matter of a couple percent, and people definitely play that, right?
That's
so
right.
People definitely sit on exchanges and stuff, and they'll sell USDT to DAI and back. They'll, you know, you'd have to do it with hundreds of thousands of dollars that I don't have,
mm-hmm.
To be able to make those 1%, 2% gains. Interestingly enough, people also do this in the regular market with,
absolutely, right? With exchange, yeah.
Yeah, foreign, yeah. exchange rate.
That's right. It was Mark, yeah. Cuban, actually. Yeah. He converted all his US debt to Japanese yen because, yeah. of the devaluation of the currency.
Right.
So we are seeing that in a world. But guys, you have to remember that The whole concept of stablecoin comes in because the banks didn't want to deal with crypto world.
Right.
So crypto world needed to come up with a denomination that they could just transport it through different chains and being able to make the trade possible for average Joes like you and I.
Right. Because banks aren't going to sit there and be like, oh, just when you're done with your crypto doings, just come put your funds safely back into the bank and we'll take care of it. No, they don't want to have it. Anything to do with that risk.
That's
or,
right.
Or especially you making money. Or losing it, depending on what you're doing, right? So that brings us to the third piece here.
That's right. And that's a question of what can you do with the stable coins?
Right. So one of the best things that people use crypto or stable coins for is something called tethering. And that's when you got an inkling or a feeling that something's going to tank, like the crypto market might tank. You just got a feeling or, you know, you're making a bet and you can take some of your assets and trade them for USDT, USDC, DAI, whatever, and keep them in a stable coin so that when the price starts to fluctuate, you're out of there, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So you minimize your risk if you've got an inkling that something's going to happen.
For traditional investors, this is the typical of money market. You're just saying, okay, you know what? I don't know where this market is going to go for. I want to have kind of a safety to just make sure that the value of my investment is there. So as a result, you take it, pull it out of the stock market, and you put it in a money market, and you're just basically waiting for the time to go back.
Mm-hmm. And you know it's not going to go up or down generally.
Generally,
unless something happens, you know, you never know with crypto. Even a stable coin is not fully risk-free, just a lot less risky than regular crypto, right?
True.
Like a lot less risky. But I'd say that's the one, probably the need that created them, right? Is the need to be able to have a safe haven for your money while you wait.
That's right. Yeah.
Another great thing you can do with them is you can use stable coins as collateral. They're really like pretty universally accepted if you want to collateralize an asset, as in use lending and borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to take out like a loan in crypto, you could just, you know, put your stable coins against it and say, okay, I'm going to take out this Ethereum or this AVAX, and I'm going to go do something with it. And then hopefully I'll make some money and then I can come back and pay back the AVAX I borrowed or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then it releases my stable coin, of course, for a fee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, all these loans, hopefully you can stake it in a smart contract and earn on it and earn more than the interest you're charged. So mm-hmm. And if you mess up and you never pay it back, well, they've frozen your stable coin. So they have those until, you know, you come back and you release that, you know, what you've collateralized. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of lend and borrow functions are going to be key, I think, going forward. We look at things like Banker Joe and stuff, which, you know, I don't know when we release here if that'll be out yet, but that's Trader Joe's kind of lend and borrow stuff, which should be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one world. They really like it as collateral, different DEXs and decentralized exchanges and such,
mm-hmm.
As well as even major centralized exchanges. You can, some of those you can do. So, So another thing we can do is a really low risk farming pair.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you can pair things like, I don't know, BUSD on Binance and USDT, and you can pair those in a farm, right? And you earn interest from people trading between these. And sometimes you can earn unreleased tokens from a source
mm-hmm.
from these. Generally, though, again, it's going to be a lot less because you're taking so little risk.
No guts, no glory. I mean, right. Even you're not taking a risk, you're not going to get rewarded for it.
Yeah.
So.
And generally, I mean, they offer pretty decent APRs sometimes, right?
What is decent APR?
Well, decent APR has changed for me since I've been in crypto. Either it's 70% or nothing, you know.
Oh, man.
But like,
it makes me laugh every time I look at my mortgage. It's like 1.45%. And it's just like, is it a joke?
Yeah, exactly. 70% or die. But yeah. So like, you might get like a 30% APR or something, which is still pretty decent, right?
Are you kidding me?
Right, it depends. I know Pancake Bunny had that a while ago. I'm not sure where that is at now, but there are different protocols where you can either stake or put a stablecoin pair up and kind of earn from a farm.
Yeah, this is really a good option for folks who want to play it a little bit more safe, and they don't want to experience the typical volatility you see in any token.
And another thing too is if like you wanted to put earnings aside, put them in a stablecoin. You like, okay, I have this savings pile that I'm saving to buy this thing. I'm going to buy these gift cards, let's say with crypto or something. You can take that out in USDT or USDC or DAI and just put it aside and keep it there, kind of like a bank account. And you can save that those assets in a pile for the future and kind of keep track of them. I know I do that on occasion just for little purchases here and there.
That's a good idea.
And another thing we can do here is we can do a half risk kind of thing. We can do a stablecoin plus a regular token. So I like for example, I'm partially in a USDC and ELK pool. And I've got that those that LP in a farm. So being paired ELK with with USDC, I know that USDC is never gonna crash. I know it's never gonna go up either. So at least one token's not going to crash, so it can reduce your impermanent loss, especially with tokens dropping. I mean, the other token might drop, right? Elk might drop or go up, and that might cause some impermanent loss. Which if you want to learn more about that, check out our last episode.
Yeah, that was a
We
good
covered
episode.
impermanent
Yeah, we
loss, so
covered that.
yeah, I don't want to go too far into that, but of course, the impermanent loss protection with Elk makes a stablecoin Elk pair pretty safe. Kind of, bet because it will never go down. And the worst case, you'll have impermanent loss when there'll only be one token moving.
That's right.
Right? So then you'll get kind of insured against
I
that.
kind of like that, because still, if you're feeling that, you know what, I don't want to be too exposed to volatility, that is the way to play.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the last thing I can think of here is it's a great way to transfer money really cheaply. If you got some friends or some other people that might take a stablecoin, that's like an instant transfer. You just transfer it over their wallet, and it's really fast and cheap, especially depending on the blockchain. Maybe if you're not if you're on Ethereum, maybe, but pretty much any other chain, it's more affordable to just send somebody a stablecoin. So it's becoming more and more popular for payments and stuff like that.
I really like that option, because if especially for international money transfers.
Yeah, and it's funny, there's these other coins like XRP and XLM. So that's Stellar is XLM. Sorry, I know probably a lot of you are familiar with XRP, but yeah, they kind of want to send be kind of the middleman in sending money across to other people at different parts of the world, and they kind of want to work with banks where stable where they're not necessarily stable tokens, though. That's kind of the disadvantage where stablecoin, that dollar is always going to be worth a US dollar
Correct.
no matter what. So you can send that and you don't have to be afraid of it changing value. So that's, I think, one of the best things that you can do is send that money that way. So
So you gave us a lot of good reasons to just have these stable coins and just play with them. What are their limitations?
there's a few. Because of a lot of the current technologies out there, a lot of the collateral, the liquidity, sorry, I should say, exists on one chain. So if I've got some USDT, a great amount of that liquidity exists on the Ethereum chain. So it kind of gets more complicated when you want to take that USDT and move it over to a different chain. Because then we need something called wrapped tokens. And this almost merits its own episode, wrapping. But basically, it means if I want to take that USDT and move it to from Ethereum to Avalanche, i.e. the AEB bridge, the Avalanche bridge. So basically, what happens is if I want to take that over, I have to. There's a smart contract that locks your USDT on the Ethereum network. It's free. It's frozen there. It's there for until you come back or somebody else comes back. On one side, and what it does is it mints a token of equal value. It so it creates what's called a wrapper. So it references that frozen liquidity on the other side, and it sends it across and actually essentially creates a different token on the second chain, on AVAX in this example. So it freezes the USDT you're transferring over, and it freezes it on the Ethereum network, so it can't be accessed.
Okay.
And then it basically creates it on the second chain as an effectively a different token, but it's referencing that frozen asset you have on the other side.
Okay.
Right? So it creates something of equal value.
That's right.
But it can't be unlocked unless somebody else bridges back the other way for that amount.
So you're always making sure that everything is seeing the frozen stable coin.
Yeah.
And you're not printing random tokens in different chains.
Because every one of those tokens that are wrapped on the other side have to be collateralized from the other side.
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what's called, I guess, exit liquidity when you come back to Ethereum.
That's
so, right. There can only be a certain amount created on the other side because it can only be equal to what's frozen on the Ethereum side, or else people aren't going to be able to go back.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? So, yeah. And I'm not sure if that can become an issue. It starts to get really complicated when you look into that, and I'm not sure if that's a problem. But I know exit liquidity is a huge bridge problem when we're looking at bridges. That's the one that ELK aims to solve because the market will always equalize supply across chains.
Yeah, because especially when you're looking at, when you're trying to use that stablecoin to go into multiple chains.
Yes.
It becomes a disaster really quickly.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm kind of like getting on my own personal rant here, how, if I want my USDT from Ethereum, and I want to take that over to AVAX, and that's where USDT.E came from. I think they removed the E now, but it was a big thing a couple months ago, right? Mm-hmm. When we did that bridge chain. And then it's going to be tricky because, you've got Ethereum coming from the Ethereum chain, and that's locked the same as Tether, and it's US, and then it'll be ETH.E. But then watch if there's Ethereum coming from the Binance chain to the AVAX chain, then we've got ETH.B. I don't know if you could then take USDT across from Binance and bring it over to, like, AVAX. It's just going to be unnecessarily complicated. It's too much.
You know what? One part of it is that. The other one is the volatility of the token prices too. And that comes into it too. How are you valuing it?
Yeah. So there's price oracles that would reference, basically what that means is if you've got Ethereum on the Avalanche chain, it's constantly asking for the price. All these DEXs are asking for the price from the Ethereum chain and saying, hey, what's the price? And it partially determines the price on that chain and that DEX based on that information. So it gets really complicated fast.
The frequency of that oracle for asking for prices and adjusting the token prices is just should be nanosecond or microsecond. Yeah,
basically, or else it can be exploited.
Yeah, otherwise, somebody with a fast internet is going to just come in and get everything out.
Yeah, it's like, and that's what Chainlink aims to do is part of that is keep the prices even. But I think the task gets more and more and more and more complex when you've got a system like this.
That's
because
right.
The more bridges you introduce, the infinitely more complex it gets, especially if you're not talking about just stable coins now.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got tokens that fluctuate in price. So that's a whole thing. Sorry. All that to say, there's real limitations when we freeze liquidity on one side, unlock it on the other mm-hmm. with a different token. It can always be costly, especially coming from ETH, and it can definitely have its limitations if you're coming from multiple areas. It can really overcomplicate things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that can be a big one, right? I think, and of course, we went over the fact that if something like USDT Tether isn't fully collateralized, doesn't have the liquidity to cover every one of its dollars, which was the worry, then if everyone sold off, what would happen?
You know what, for people who don't know what the story of Tether is, Tether is one of the top, I believe,
number three.
Top three stable coins.
Top three coins, actually.
And
of all time, I think it's number
three. Really?
Yeah.
As of today, they are around $69 billion US, and $48 billion of it, to the best of my knowledge, was distributed just this year.
That's right. Yeah, $69.8 billion, number three token. Yeah.
And after that, there are some stories out there. It's really hard to validate, but at the end of the day, when you're holding that much cash, you have to basically. So the Tether is accused of using dodgy approaches to be able to make money out of that collateral money.
Right.
It's really hard to validate or.
Yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny.
That's right. But it's rather interesting story out there. For people who are interested, they can go on online and just follow the story. But I found that rather interesting.
Yeah, it'd be worth a deep dive on that for sure.
Well, yeah, maybe one day if you have time, we can look into that. When I was hanging out in Elk website, I was just trying to kind of see what's going on. I came across the Chift.
Yeah. CHFT. Yeah. So. Chift is going to be Elk Finance's Swiss franc stablecoin. So the idea is it's going to function a lot like Elk.
Okay.
Right? And it's going to be equal in value to the Swiss franc because the Swiss franc is the most stable coin, like fiat real world coin in comparison to the rest of the market.
Okay.
And it'd be the first of its kind because something like that doesn't really exist out there.
So when you're talking about Chift versus USDT, what is the advantage of Chift?
Well, the idea is like we're not going to have this wrapper issue because it's going to be much like Elk where it can be minted and burned across chains.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
So imagine like, you know, taking your tokens around every chain that Elk is on, right? And we're going to be adding new ones and new ones all the time.
That's right.
Right. So it's going to, you can just kind of like send it across, you know, convert to the stable coin, send it across, and you can like even hold it in that stable coin or like move it to any network you need to, and you know, it's not going to really change in value.
I love that. That adds a lot of, It's a fantastic utility to be able to just do literally what you want on Elk Network.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit more complex to how it works behind the scenes, but it can be like actually natively minted on multiple chains, meaning it doesn't have to be like, you know, always locked on one chain, right? It can be minted on multiple chains. So yeah, it'll be great because you could use the ElkNet, the same thing we use for Elk, to just move it within, you know, sometimes 7 seconds between each chain. And so you can move your value across that way, right? So mm-hmm. It'll be use the same kind of burning on one chain and minting on the other to kind of do it at any time. And even if like on one chain there's less collateral in the like for some reason, which I doubt would happen, you know, it can be moved back to a chain that does hold collateral. So, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be over collateralized. So there's actually going to be always liquidity. There's going to be more than enough liquidity than there are coins. So we're not going to be even close to the upper limit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that itself is going to be kind of neat because I think other tokens or other, coins, you know, do have a little bit of a more of a risk of being devalued compared to the Swiss franc in terms of real world currencies. And, you know, the Swiss franc has like a ton of, you know, it's got a great unmatched track record of stability.
So how far are we from having Chift?
That's a good question. So it'll be a bit. I mean, it's the Elk Finance soon TM. So I don't want to put a date on it. Because I don't have one yet and I don't have the authority to say. So, but I think it's something that, we can kind of keep our eye on for now. It's not that far away.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting to know. With this question, I think, we covered pretty much the stable coins and, please, stay in touch with us. If you have any questions, if you have any, comments, please let us know. And, we will definitely try to include your comments, suggestions, or questions in our future episodes.
Yeah, you can kind of get a hold of me directly, LTSnakePliskin, at t.me/elk_finance_chat. That's our Telegram. The link will be in the description as well for the podcast. And yeah, thanks for joining us. And again, thanks to Roland for writing a pretty great article. And you can check that article out in our description.
Have a great one and see you in our next episode.
All right. See ya. Thanks.